Are you ready?
It's Afternoons with OMF.
Rivers passes. Caught for the touchdown by Williams. Phillip Rivers puts two fingers up as if they are going to go for the win.
I was going sideline. I was gone. Coach Lynn said, let's go win it right now.
Mike Vrabel did this earlier in the year against the Chargers.
I mean, I love Mike Vrabel.
End zone wide open. What a night for Mike Williams. And the Chargers have their first lead of the night.
Yeah. Let's go win it right now.
Right now.
It's not my anus. It's just a chocolate mold.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Modeling right now. That's where Fourier is. He's modeling for the...
his anus?
For his anus. The chocolate anus that we'll get for
I'm never eating
Christmas
anything.
Gifts.
I'm not even going to eat that seafood gumbo begins with me now. I don't know what the hell's in that thing.
Why would anybody eat something like that? I mean, you really have to be a chocolate holic or whatever to eat something, right? I mean, what?
No, Glenn, because even if you're a chocolate holic, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
You just eat chocolates. There's plenty of chocolates out there. You don't need one sculpted of your anus.
Did you see this guy? This guy was a little weird. The guy that actually...
No, I didn't see him. You were giving me some of the quotes.
Oh, no. He looked like looked like Dr. Brown from Back to the Future with a lot more. And he just seemed like he was nutty. Yeah.
What do you give to the man who has everything?
Here you go. Right there. Chocolate anus. That's what you need. You know, we haven't talked much about the Celtics. Do you feel better about the Celtics? Do you think they have turned the corner here?
You know what I think has happened? And, you know, we jokingly, you know, when they were struggling with, you know, they're going with this regular starting five, half jokingly, I should say, I said, what they need is an injury. You know, I mean, they need to take some pieces out and allow these other pieces figure out their roles, get comfortable, gain some confidence. And you sort of, it's happened that way.
Like,
right?
one of the average guys.
Well, no, when average, yeah, it goes up, but no. I'm talking about, say, Jaylen Brown gets hurt, right? Hayward stays on the bench. But still, it a lot like Smart's in there. You know, we know what his role is. We saw what that is the other night. We all know what he is. But Tatum is comfortable. Marcus Morris. It was like when they had their starting five of Al, Kyrie, Smart, Morris, and Tatum, right? Which is pretty much their starting five at this point, even though Al's out. Those are the five guys that actually know their roles.
Yeah.
On this basketball team.
And that was the lineup. In New Orleans, where they started all of
this. So when you say, like, you know, Morris knows what he does, he shoots, right? Tatum's good now, you know, and I understand the mid-range jumper, and I think that was an adjustment for him. You know, Brad Stevens had, as far as shot selection, but Kyrie, Al, Marcus Smart, they know what their roles are. The confusion came in with Jaylen Brown. The confusion came with Gordon Hayward, and that confusion was more of who is he now? You know what I mean? Like, he's not 100%. This isn't the player in Utah. He's trying to work his way into it. So by taking a few pieces out, you've just created a lot more. It's a lot more comfortable on the floor.
So what happens when they all come back? Because they're coming back. I mean, Hayward's coming back, and Al's coming back.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and Al's no
Jaylen
problem.
Brown was out again
Al
the other night, but he's back.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown, I think Gordon Hayward, they still for a while now until they all come back, especially Hayward. You know, I still feel kind of like they filled that role coming off the bench. And I think it's worked for them. And they got to change their mentality. I know that Kyrie Irving was talking about this in that Jackie Mack piece a while ago, whatever, a few days ago, and it was outstanding. You know, these kids, especially a 21, 22-year-old kid, they get fawned over forever, right? And the idea of coming off the bench to them is an insult.
Yeah, I don't get that.
But no,
it's true, though. It's true. And Jaylen Brown actually stated in that piece that it was the most difficult thing he has had to do. And I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to be
kidding
me. Well,
think about it, though, but years ago, you know, maybe if you go to college, maybe as a freshman, because kids weren't just taking off. Back in the day when guys were going to college for 3 years, you know what I mean? So as a freshman, you didn't walk on as like the best player in the team getting all the shots. Sometimes you came off the bench as a freshman. You know, you work your way into the starting lineup. Now, these kids come in, the ones that are one and done.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When they come in to Kentucky and Duke and Cal or wherever it might be, they're the superstars.
Yeah.
Look what's going on. You know, I mean, they're the team. The freshmen are the team. The juniors and seniors, they're the role players, right? So they've done it their whole lives. So now I'm on the bench. You know, rather than saying, yes, yeah, you're on the bench because we got a very good team. And oh, by the way, there's still going to be nights where you're going to get yours off the bench. You might start there, but you're still going to get your 30 minutes because you're feeling it, you know, and you're going to have that night where you're getting 25. But it's just, it takes a while for these young kids who have never had to deal with that their entire lives, ever.
No, I think that's a great point. And I'm looking at the roster right now, and they're mostly guys that played 1 year in college. And they came in as a freshman, and they were a superstar that 1 year.
Lottery picks.
Right, and then they move on. So they've won seven in a row. They're playing Atlanta at home tonight. They should win by 25 in this one. Atlanta sucks. And I'm looking at the schedule going forward. And they should. This is the time you've got to make up now on this schedule, because then they go to at Detroit, Phoenix at home. They're really bad, and even the tougher games like Milwaukee, Charlotte, and Philadelphia on the 21st, the 23rd, and then Christmas Day, they're all being played in Boston. So they're now going to have two games against Milwaukee already this year. They should win them both. They've already won one of them, but they're going to be in Boston. Same thing with Philadelphia, going to be in Boston. This schedule is easy. Then they go at Houston after the after Christmas, at Memphis, at San Antonio. I won't bore you with the entire schedule, but it's easy. They should reel off, you know, 12, 15 in a row, 15 well, out of 16, something like
that. They should,
not
because it's home, but they should because they're a good team.
They're a good team.
And this is why, like, early on in the year, you know, everybody kept throwing out, like, well, look at the strength of schedule. Look at the teams they're playing. Well, you know, yeah, okay, I'll give you credit. I mean, Denver, good team. You know, what did they lose to? Utah, all right, Portland. But you're the Celtics.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be better than them.
Absolutely.
You're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to look at their schedule and say, damn, Boston's coming in. We got a tough stretch here. You know, so when you sit there and say, oh, great, you know, they're only, 6-4, but look at their schedule. Well, you know, no, sorry, I'm not buying that, because we all know now they weren't normal. They weren't right. They were trying to figure out their roles. So, yes, they're going to get some nice home games, but they should be winning ball games left and right because they're just better than everybody else. They're deeper than everybody else.
And I can tell you this, they're going to make some ground up very, very quickly here, and they're going to pass Milwaukee and Philadelphia in the next month. And the reason I say that is the NBA is a home court league, more so than any other sport. All you have to do is look at the numbers. Milwaukee is 13-3 at home. They're 5-6 on the road. They have played 16 home games. They've only played 11 away games. That means they have to make up some road games, and obviously they're at best like a 500 team on the road. So, in Boston, on the other hand, is 8-3 at home. They're 9-7 on the road. But they've played 11 home games, 16 away games. They're going to make up five games at home. And I've already given you the schedule. These are pretty bad teams. So, they're going to start winning a lot more games. They're going to move ahead of Milwaukee and Philly. Now, I'm not going to say Toronto, mainly because Toronto was going through a tough period right now with a tough schedule, with big road games without Kawhi Leonard. And they're winning these games. To me, and Toronto has more of these seasoned veterans, I think they've figured it out. When you talk about, and they're deep. You talk about deep. Boston likes to say we're deeper than any other team. We can afford to have guys down. Toronto may be deeper than you are. Certainly those guys understand their roles. And I think that's it. That's why I'm not buying in yet that the Celtics have fixed this. I think you nailed it. So what has happened is a couple of guys have been sick, ill, hurt, and other guys are sitting there going, ooh, great. I'm getting 34 minutes tonight.
To feed me.
Right. And you and they go out there and they play their game. But when they bring everybody together and all of these guys play.
I don't know if they have to, though.
Then what happens?
No, I'm just saying. I'm not.
What do you do with some of the guys?
I could see Jaylen Brown staying right where he is.
What do you mean staying where he is?
Staying like that sixth man. I could see Gordon Hayward maybe flipping spots with Marcus Morris. You know, when he gets. And I'm not saying right now, but like in a month or two, I mean, Gordon Hayward, you know, is to me a better player. And I think if he gets to his game, he replaces Marcus Morris in that lineup. But I can see Jaylen Brown and Morris with Rozier coming off the bench. I mean, I don't think you have to sit there and say, well, we still have to see all five of these guys on the court at the right time and see how it meshes. I don't know why you have to do that.
Yeah, see, I'm not worried about the starting lineup, but I'm worried about the roles. And I'll give you an example of it. You brought up Marcus Morris. We'll throw him out there. I love Marcus Morris, and I love his game. And I love the fact that...
He's been the most consistent player.
Yeah, but the great thing about him is...
Kyrie.
Kyrie's been... Yeah, those two.
But I'm just saying Morris.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But they've needed Morris because of the injuries they've had, and they needed somebody else to score, Lou. And so Marcus Morris can flick the switch and say, okay, you need 30 for me tonight? I'll give you 30.
Yeah, right? 18?
But,
what do you need?
But when you shut the switch down and you say to him, we need you to have a lesser role... is he going to do all of those little things that you need to do?
See, here's the thing.
Over a long period of time now.
Once you get everybody
healthy, Morris is not getting the playing time again.
No, but I don't think the role changes for Marcus Morris. The minutes might.
The scoring will change.
Well, no,
he's not touching the ball the way he is now.
No, but the advanced stats as far as like points, whatever, all this per minutes and everything else, I actually think he can go on the bench and get you 22, 24 minutes a game and still have those same percentages, scoring efficiency. I don't think his role changes. He might not get that starting lineup minutes with all these bodies coming back healthy. So maybe he goes from 32, 33 minutes to 22, 24 minutes, whatever it might be. But his role, when he's on the court, shoot, be a scorer, be aggressive. So that's a mindset to me. That doesn't change. Now, he might not get the same opportunity as far as minutes go, but his role does not change.
Yeah, see, when Al comes back, you're going to see probably in Baines.
Perfect execution, when Baines, the screens.
Yeah, when Baines is playing.
The spreading of the floor.
Shut up.
The passes.
He's just going to piss off the
green
teamers
right now.
Abby, I'm sorry. Poetry in motion. I'm sorry, Scal.
It's beautiful to watch.
So, Robert Williams' minutes are going to be cut, and we get that and understand that.
Cut, it'd be gone.
And right now, he's got an opportunity, and the fans love him and whatever. And I think he's more advanced than I ever thought he would be in the time that he's played out there. So he's a guy that's still a project for you. I'm not worried about him. But what about some of these other guys, like Rozier? What about him?
Same role.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Yeah. Like off the bench. Yeah.
Contract year. Marcus Morris, contract year. Suddenly you're going to cut back the minutes. You're going to cut back the numbers. Other teams are looking for numbers. And I thought it was interesting, Rozier's comments the other day. They win a couple games. And he suddenly starts taking shots at the fact that everybody's pissing and moaning that they're not playing well or something. That was a strange comment, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was tired.
Good to see that after kind of the first 20 games of frustration and, guys wondering when it's going to break out, that you're just seeing this and guys are feeling good. And, it seems like everybody's kind of collectively coming together and playing well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. It's been very good for us. We win our last couple of games, so we want to keep it going. And everybody can shut up, because everybody's been very annoying. We've been losing. Very annoying.
In other words, it's getting to them. Okay, they don't like it.
It's easy
we don't
to say
like
that
it
when
people
blow
are
out a lottery team by 50 points.
Please, come on.
They beat the Bulls by 56.
Right.
And it's annoying?
Yeah, a night after.
You're 10-10?
Right.
And the team themselves, I mean, the guys on there predicting championships and the team to beat. So what's really annoying? How much heat is really there? You know what's annoying is that when they weren't playing, good basketball, what we thought they were capable of, the reason why that man is annoyed is because there was a lot of chatter about that guy not being happy with his role. And that guy maybe having to be moved. So he might have been annoyed. But I'm pretty sure. You think Kyrie Irving would sit there and say, I was annoying hearing you guys talking about us losing? Or do you think he sat there and said, it was justified because we're not playing up to our capability?
No, I think Kyrie's been good, and things he said, I think, make an awful lot of sense.
It's annoying watching your ass go out there and your team's ass go out there and lose to teams like the Knicks. You know what? That's annoying.
Right.
Lose to Orlando, Terry. That's annoying. Watching your offense look nothing like it was in the past, or your defense at times, that's annoying. Watching somebody go out there and get 50 points on you on a night that about five or six guys do it in the first 20 games, that's annoying too. Are you going to sit there and say, oh, it's annoying here, the media kind of talking about it?
Well, the other thing they've got to be careful about is that 56-point win in Chicago is a little bit deceiving when we now have the kind of the backstory to all of it. So they go and they beat Oklahoma City that night like by 4, 119, 115, something like that. New coach has just taken over. He wants to be a hard ass. He thinks that they've been getting away with too much. So he forces them to practice that Saturday afternoon. And they wanted to boycott the practice. They wanted to form a mutiny on the guy. And so they go out that night and they're sitting there going, screw
Lay
you.
An egg.
Screw you. Yeah, you want to see what it's like if we don't put out? Here's what it's like. Mm. Get whipped at home by 56. Little bit deceiving now when we know the true story of what was going on with the Bulls. We got to get the true story with Mike Lombardi on this whole incident on the last play in Miami and something that Mike said in his podcast this week. We'll get him to fess up coming up next.
OMF. We return to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Paul, I think they got to be worried on the road, Tate Frazier. I think there's no doubt. I mean, look, they're not a good team on the road. Their defense was porous. I think if you want to take one thing from the miracle play, is take how slow the Patriots looked defensively in that on that play. And I'm not talking about Gronk. I mean, Bill admitted that Gronk didn't belong on the field. That was a mistake. I mean, the Patriots got beat in an area where they never usually get beat, which is in game, which is situational football. I think if he gets this team to it this year, I think it'll be one of his most amazing coaching performances.
All right, that's our guy, Mike Lombardi. We always like listening to Mike's podcast earlier in the week because it gives us an idea of what we can go at on Friday's show. It's all sponsored by Norfolk Power Equipment and Town Fair Tire. How are you doing today, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
I am doing good. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you guys?
Terrific. All right. So we have the same reaction you had to that last play. It was awful and whatever. The one thing I don't understand, unless, because I know you do communicate with people down there, where did you get the idea that Bill apologized for that or said he was wrong about it? It was a mistake because he didn't. We drilled him with it on Monday, and he supported it. He supported the personnel move.
Well, I think that it's one of those situations where I think when you look at situational football, I think that wasn't really, they got beat at their own game. And I think that, I don't know what he said to them. I haven't talked to him this week, but I think...
No, because you said that. You said that, he admitted that it was wrong. We tried to get him out of him on Monday, and he wouldn't go there. Matter of fact, just the opposite. Now, I think I have an idea of what happened, and I know you know how the inner workings of that organization, game operation, and everything else. So I'm going to ask you this, because Brian, players now have admitted, defensive players, that Brian Flores basically apologized, basically came mm-hmm. out and said it was on him. It was on the coaching staff. And you know, coaches do that when the game is over, and they do that stuff. Brian Flores has now come out and pretty much said it won't happen again, one of those. So that's pretty obvious. So he's the one that puts the personnel packages out there on the field, correct?
Yeah, but I think Bill takes the global responsibility for everything, and I think that's what I'm referring to is the global responsibility of a bad loss. I think that's really, and as I said on my podcast, I think it's not just that play. I think that play was, the play at the end of the half was bad, the missed extra points. There's more than just one play. And I think unilaterally he takes responsibility for that.
Okay, but he hasn't apologized or said differently. He may be standing up right now for Flores. That would be my guess. He doesn't want to expose him.
That's why he's always been about protecting the coaches, about protecting assistants. I mean, this is never anybody. As long as I've known Bill Belichick, he don't throw anybody under the bus.
All right, but he's ever. He's got the headset on. My guess is that Ernie Adams, isn't Ernie the quality control guy up there? He's got the headset on. Why wouldn't Bill or Ernie or somebody sit there and say, hey, why does Brian have a Gronk out here? Is this the Hail Mary personnel package?
I think certainly an after fact, I'm sure they would have all liked to do it. I think what happened probably in that situation, and I wasn't there, but, when you sit there with only 7 seconds to go in the game, it looked to me like they had, they saw that three receiver set to one side, and it looked like a Hail Mary was coming on that side. And they had Kyle Van Noy over to the other side to kind of spy on the quarterback so that he could run to him in case he had trying to leverage the ball down the field, had a javelin throw it down the field to get it there so he could stop that, and then the ball came out so quick. So, look, I mean, you can go over the play 1,000 times. I think everybody realizes it was a mistake, and not that play. I mean, it cost him the game, but there were other things that cost him the game as well.
Mike, one of the things we talk about is this team on the road. I know you referenced it as well, and really, the running game against this team, but more importantly, overall defensively, the way they looked against Minnesota at home, they go on the road here. What does it tell you about a team defensively that looks one way at home and the other way on the road?
It's always, to me, it's the measuring stick of who you are as a football team. And if you can't get mentally tough, you can't win on the road. You can't get control of the game on the road. And even that game, there's always two things that happen during a football game. There's control and there's the scoreboard. In that game, the Patriots were in control of the scoreboard, but never the game, and because they couldn't get stops when they really needed them. I mean, you go up 7-0 or 6-0, and boom, they come right back down the field. You go up 4-13, boom, they come right, So they could never get control of that, and I think that was a huge problem. When you look at them on the road and you see that teams have been able to run the football effectively. I mean, Miami runs for 189 yards in that game when typically Miami hasn't been a great run team. Tennessee runs for 150, you know, and so Detroit runs for 159. And, you know, when you don't create turnovers on the road and you can't stop people, it becomes a lack of being able to control the game.
So is Pittsburgh the perfect place to go right now? Because they're more messed up than you are, and they're messed up even at home.
Yeah, I mean, look, Pittsburgh's 1-3 the last 4 weeks, and that one win came against Jacksonville. Really, they stole that one. They had no business winning that game. They've turned the ball over 9 times in the last 4 games. I mean, last week against the Raiders, you know, you can talk about the Raiders being tanking. They're not. I mean, the Raiders moved the ball effectively, had almost a 300-yard passing day against them. And so this, to me, is going to be a game where I think the Patriots, much like they did when they went to Chicago, when they play well, they're going to have to get control of this game with their run game. They're going to have to be effective. I think when you look at the Patriots offensively since the bye week, they're 2-1, but they've been really good since the bye week. I know they lost to Miami, should have won that game, but you know, when you see their numbers, they're 21 for 42 on third down since the bye. They've had 452 yards rushing in 3 games since the bye. You know, they've only turned the ball over 1 time, and they've controlled the ball 34 minutes since the bye. I mean, this is the recipe. This is going to have to be the way the Patriots get better on the road, is by dominating with their offense and then allowing their defense to play situationally.
Mike, did you see a different Rob Gronkowski, or was it a game plan, the way the Dolphins defended him, was the reason why he had a great game?
Well, I think, you know, look, I think he looks like he's gotten a little bit better, and I think they don't really have a guy that can match up with Gronk. That's a hard thing to do. Tim McDonald's not going to match up with Gronk, and I think there's that Miami defense is not very good, and but they play better at home than they typically do. I was disappointed in the fact the Patriots only ran for 77 yards. Teams run the ball more effectively against Miami. Got the big run that got called back late in the game for Holden. But I think Gronk, to me, looks like he's actually, since he's had the time off, he's playing better.
Did they do everything right at the end of that game? Because a lot of people think that, you know, they should have thrown the ball to go for that touchdown. But we I don't know, run the ball down to 7 seconds. But at the end of that game,
look, how many times does a team have 7 seconds to beat you? Seriously,
right.
It's 70 yards. I mean, I think they played it picture perfect. And, you know, they didn't get the guy on the ground. And what I said on my podcast to me, which is what I thought we were going to talk about, is, look, they were slow on that field. They were not – there was not a lot of athleticism on that field. And it showed, because Drake just ran away from everybody.
But why, though? You've got Jonathan Jones out there, J.C. Jackson, a young kid. Is it the weather wearing out in the fourth quarter? I agree with you. They look slow. They almost look tentative, like, do we really need to make the tackle right now?
I think they were so worried about the pitches and who's going to get the ball. And, you know, somebody's got to take the point and got to get the ball out of Drake's hands. And so, look, I mean, that's going to happen. That's going to take another 20 years before that kind of play is going to beat somebody. And like I said, I mean, typically the Patriots never get beat in situational football. And in that game, two situations that they ultimately controlled, they got beat in.
And the other one, I guess, were you as shocked as everybody around here when you saw the way the first half ended? Tom Brady taking a sack with no timeouts left?
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, you know, I think what Tom said, I think he said on your guys' show that he lost track of the downs or he lost track of the timeouts. I'm not sure which. But
no, he admitted it. Yep.
Yeah, that's not Patriot football. Miss extra point. Nobody puts more time into field goals and extra points than the Patriots do. No one does. And to miss an extra point and to miss a field goal and then to not give up a field goal. Look, that game there comes, they lose by one, but they leave 3 points on the field at the end of the half. They give up a cheap touchdown, which is 6, which is just mind-boggling. They miss a field goal. They miss an extra point. There's a lot of ways that game could have gone a lot of different directions.
Yeah, when you look at the numbers, you look at the box score, you sit there and say, you got to be kidding me. And then on top of that, 2 blocked punts, which is amazing.
I've never seen a game where a team blocks 2 punts and loses.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen that.
Well, even better.
And yet they did.
They didn't turn the ball over at all. New England, they had the ball for 11 more times. They had 30 more plays on the field that day. 30 more plays. I mean, the box score.
They had the ball 35 minutes. And that's my point about the defense on the road. I mean, look, when you give up that many points in playing just 25 minutes of defense, you have to be worried.
Yeah.
The best way to play defense in the NFL today is play less defense. That's the formula. And since the bye week, that's what the Patriots have done. They played 34 minutes against the Jets offensively, 33 minutes against Minnesota, 35 against Miami and lost. That's their formula. That's what we're going to, you got to get used to. That's how they're going to stop people. They're going to keep their offense on the field. And when you're 21 for 42 on third down, that's 50%. That's remarkable.
All right. From week to week, you never know what's going to happen in this league, because we thought that was the killer last week, losing Miami. And obviously, with the outcome of last night's game, the Patriots could be sitting in the number one seed. But let's say they win these three games, obviously very capable of doing it. Is there a possibility now, when you look at the schedule ahead, the Kansas City, for this great season that they've had, start the playoffs as the number five seed?
You know, look, the Chargers are an amazing team. They gave a game away in Denver, really poor management in that game. They kind of let one slip away. They lose the opener to the Chiefs, and they lose a tight one to the Rams. But they've gone on the road and won in Seattle. They've gone on the road and won in Pittsburgh. They've gone on the road and won in Kansas City without their best player, Melvin Gordon. And they lost one of their other best players,
Keenan Allen
Dorn, the guy. Yeah. So what can, to me, there is one team in the AFC, one team, that can control the game and can get the lead in the game, and that's the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chargers can control games, and they can get the lead in the game. Even when they were down by two touchdowns, they weren't out of the game because they can get back with their offense, the great Phillip Rivers. They're the only team that can do both. Very, very few other teams. Kansas City never gets control of the game unless they get up by 21 points. Never. Pittsburgh's the same way. Baltimore is probably the only other team that can do it because they control the clock so much with their run game.
So, Mike, obviously Mike McCarthy is gone in Green Bay, and there's talks of other coaches, guys like Harbaugh in Baltimore, see how that thing turns out. But this week, a lot of the talk has been Tomlin. They've lost three straight. This team, a lot of talent the last few years, hasn't been successful. So is Mike Tomlin in trouble if his team doesn't make the postseason, or should he be?
Well, I don't think that's how they operate there. Look, the one thing I know about the Steelers is they believe in their culture. They believe in trying to solve problems internally as opposed to trying to start over. I think there's something to that as well. I think that's what they'll do. They'll look at their season. I think really when you study this Steeler team this year, when Big Ben has to throw the ball more than 40 times a game, they don't win. They try to do it. They talk about having balance, but they can't get control of the game. It's not a Le'Veon Bell problem. It's just that they don't get control of the game. They miss James Conner. I think this is a game whichever team can control it with their run game will win on Sunday.
So they're loyal with their head coach. I understand that. But yeah, should he be on the hot seat with the talent he said?
I don't think so, because I'll say this to you. Who are you going to replace him with? Who do you have?
There's always someone.
No, there's not always someone. Trust me, I've lived that always someone, and I got fired. It's a hard job to find a coach. Qualified head coaches are hard to find. Hard to find. And when you got one that you can work with and is willing to listen and maybe adapt some things and change some things, I think you're better off working that way than you are going the other way.
Now, I understand the continuity of it all, and all you have to do is look at Cleveland and other franchises that change up every year or two. On the other hand, if they lose to New England, then lose down in New Orleans, and they miss out on the playoffs this year with that team, you could talk about, no Bell, and you could talk about Connor and the injury, and he did practice today. Mike, we don't know how much he did practice. He was limited participation. That's going to be pretty hard to sell to those fans down there, isn't it?
Well, I don't think they really worry about that. That's the one thing that Art Rudess never did. When he took over control of the team, he stopped worrying about the fans. He started thinking, doing what's right for his organization, and I think that's ultimately what he did.
Unbelievable. You can get Mike's book. It's a great holiday gift, Gridiron Genius. You can find it out there. Talking about the Gridiron Genius, we'll talk to you next week, Mike. Have a good
Thanks,
one.
Guys.
See you.
All right, Mike.
Mike Lombardi.
Jeez. For a while there, I thought you guys were going to do a one-on-one.
I was trying to get an answer.
Good God.
Was I not trying to get an answer?
I don't think I got an answer.
How long did it go?
Are you jealous? Are you jealous that Mike and I...
How long was his first question? Felt like that was like 6 minutes long.
I wanted to get an answer out. You said that, he admitted that it was wrong. We tried to get him out of him on Monday, and he wouldn't go there. Matter of fact, just the opposite. Now, I think I have an idea of what happened, and I know you know how the inner workings of that organization team operates.
It goes by very quickly, though, when you're listening.
Have admitted defensive players.
You don't even notice how long it went.
Basically came out and said it was on him.
Didn't even notice it.
And coaches do that when the game's over, and they do that stuff. Brian Flores has now come out and pretty much said it won't happen again. One of those. So that's pretty obvious. So he's the one that puts the personnel packages out there in the field, right?
That was the first question.
We had to set him up.
You could have set him up. Yeah.
He didn't answer.
You said Bill apologized. When?
He didn't set it up, though.
He said he made a mistake. When? End of story.
He didn't make a mistake.
Mike, go ahead, speak.
That's what he said, right?
No, he didn't, but Jesus, it took you an hour and a half to get to it.
Well, we got to get to it.
Good God.
I wanted to give him a little background, maybe, Just get a little background. Some guys find
like
out exactly.
Some guys like salad and appetizers.
There you go.
Hey, Mike. Very good. Yeah, you said that Bill apologized. I said he made a mistake. When?
I think I had to follow it up, though, even though I went that long. Did I not have to follow
that
it up like
been the
three
first
times?
Question. Yeah, you could have. But
and then the second question would have been the long one.
That was your follow-up question.
Was it?
That one
what was
right
the
there.
First question I asked him?
God.
I know. I asked him, I think, the first time out, right out of the gate.
I know.
Where he came up with
you
this.
Muffled that thing, too. Jesus.
Oh, Mr. Broadcaster over here. Mr. Broadcaster over here.
Four-minute question.
When you take over and you and Joe are doing the broadcast, man, you're doing your little talk show on those Red Sox games.
On the Red Sox broadcast, that talk show that I'm going to be running.
Yeah.
We're going to be a lot quicker than that.
The one thing I don't understand, unless, because I know you do communicate with people down there, where did you get the idea that Bill apologized for that or said he was wrong about it? It was a mistake because he didn't. We drilled him with it on Monday, and he supported it. He supported the personnel move.
Well, I mean, I think that it's one of those situations where
the
I think
the second question was a good minute and a half.
Yeah, but the first one was succinct and to the point.
Kind of.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back and open up the phone lines at 617-779-7937. Load them up. We talk to you coming up next.
The Drive Home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Town Fair Tire sells every name brand at the guaranteed lowest price. And Town Fair offers more free services than any other tire dealer. For the best prices on tires, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Now back to Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
How's it going? Everybody out doing their shopping?
Party interview.
Behind.
Party interview.
Christmas comes at an inconvenient time right in the middle of football season.
It's a great holiday.
Yeah, it's a great holiday.
I definitely enjoy kicking back and relaxing. Christmas comes at an inconvenient time.
This was Bill today.
Wow.
Bill, press conference today. He's talking about Christmas.
Makes me feel even better about my New England pick. Down
They've done all your shopping? He was feeling
good.
In a,
move,
in a,
good
a,
week
yeah,
of practice.
You
feel like they're ready to go.
This is a great move.
That's a good one, getting ready for the game.
Hey, do you think that Albert McClellan has any chance of making a Pro Bowl?
Who?
You know the guy last week? Punts. The guy last week that blocked two punts?
Pro Bowl?
Pro Bowl.
No. Didn't they cut him 2 years ago?
Well, Baltimore
cut
him this year, didn't
McClellan.
They?
So the Pro Football Focus came out this week.
I did see this.
Their early picks for the 2019 Pro Bowl.
I don't go by this.
McClellan is on this list for special teams.
So they had three players from the Patriots making a Pro Bowl. He was one of them, correct?
Yes.
Actually, Pro Football Focus, as in the AFC, has Shaq Mason graded out as the best guard. AFC.
I could see that.
Yeah. And Stephon Gilmore is the other representative. But here's the problem with this credibility. So Pro Football Focus puts out, like right now, what they would vote on the Pro Bowl. So I'm looking at a few of them. And right away in the very first sheet, so, you know, NFC, right? Quarterbacks, Breeze, Rodgers, Goff. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, whatever. I'm down with that. All right. Running backs. NFC running backs. What would you think? Give me three names.
Rob. Barkley?
Yeah.
Todd Gurley?
Yeah.
The kid that plays for the Giants, Griffin? Griffith?
Barkley.
Barkley, I already mentioned.
I think of.
Already mentioned.
Easy, Stephen A.
Blake Griffin is going to have a great game for the Giants.
NFC.
Kamara,
excuse me. Yeah,
yeah, well, their three names are Barkley, Kamara, and Chris Carson.
He's had a good year with Seattle.
Pro Football Focus does not have Todd Gurley representing the NFC in the Pro Bowl.
Well, it's funny.
And they say Chris Carson may surprise you, especially with Todd Gurley's absence. But Carson best Gurley in broken tackles and yards after contact.
Excuse me.
What? So,
well, they're doing a lot of intense
analysis. But right
analysis.
Away, I see that. I'm like,
where are they
okay,
coming up with Albert McClellan?
I don't know,
up
but this
that?
List, NFC starting running backs, and they have Chris Carson over Todd Gurley because he breaks more tackles and yards after contact.
Yeah. That's the focus in Pro Football Focus.
How about this one? How about tight ends? NFC tight ends. Should be pretty easy, correct?
NFC?
NFC tight ends.
Yeah, who do they have?
So, George Kittle, San Fran.
Okay.
Right? Probably their best wide receiver.
Right.
O.J. Howard.
Okay.
Zach Ertz.
They don't have him?
No. Isn't he about to break the record for receptions by tight ends in a season?
But his team has been disappointing, so they're probably looking at it.
Sorry, has Tampa been good?
There's got to be some analytics. What do they say for him? Is he getting tackled by the second guy on the second line or the third line? Or He's got to be. There's got to be some.
I mean, even admit, if only Howard stayed in the field for the whole season, we'd be talking about him.
Yeah, none of this stuff makes.
But
sense.
I don't. And then, I mean, the AFC stuff is just like the running backs. AFC running backs. Melvin Gordon.
Makes sense.
Okay. After that, Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry ran for 200-something yards and 3 touchdowns the other night. Other than that,
hasn't been consistent all year long.
Not consistent. He hasn't been any good.
No, you're right. Matter of fact, he's been the second guy in some of those games.
Hasn't
been even the feature back.
He had one good game. Nick Chubb. And
everybody loves Chubb right now because that's been kind of the turning point for the Cleveland
Browns. Okay, great. Who's been better this year, James Conner or Nick Chubb?
James Conner.
Who's been better this year, Philip Lindsay or Derrick Henry?
Lindsay's been better.
I mean, I don't. This is pro football focus. They look at numbers.
But
they look at
stuff differently than you look at it, Lou.
I guess so.
They don't look at it the same way.
Todd Gurley's not on their list.
By the way, he's number 4 right now in the voting for Pro Bowl. So it's Drew Brees number 1, Patrick Mahomes number 2, Saquon Barkley number 3, Todd Gurley 4.
Who's not on their Pro Bowl.
Jared Goff 5. Oh, here you go. It plays right into your list here. The rest of the top 10, Ezekiel Elliott.
Yep.
Forgot about him.
Another one. He should be there in front of Kamara.
James Conner.
Conner, yeah.
Antonio Brown, Alvin Kamara, and Tyreek Hill.
Well, Antonio Brown's not on their AFC, neither is Juju. But you're right. Saquon, Zeke Elliott, and Gurley.
Right.
That's your. Instead, they got Carson and Kamara.
Yeah, you know what this is.
This is pro football focus.
Nah, but they do stupid things. They look at it much differently than most people look at it. They come up with, these bizarre.
So we should only use this when it helps.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so when they say Shaq Mason's the best guard, we say, okay, you guys know what they're talking about.
Lou,
Trey Flowers. They had Trey Flowers graded like really high, but he's not in this selection. I don't get it.
Albert McClellan did this past week. It was really good. Those 2 block punts. But he was with Baltimore, right? At the beginning of the year.
They released him, right?
Then he got cut. By Baltimore.
Now he's a pro bowler because he blocked 2 punts.
How is that possible?
And Derrick Henry's a pro bowler because he ran 3 touchdowns for 200 yards the other night, and that's it.
I don't
get any of it.
Well, if you're going to go based on the last thing you've seen, wouldn't James Devlin be your top fullback? He's got 4 touchdowns in the last 2 games. Andy Janovich hasn't done anything for Denver.
Yeah, listen, I don't know. I don't follow the fullback position across the league.
That's why I'm.
So I don't know what he's doing out there in Denver. Maybe he's doing great things.
No, nobody cares about the fullback position. So I'm trying to look it up. I want to see the games that this guy played. It's unbelievable.
you talk about this guy Janovich, which I don't really care about. Apparently, he says to be honest, he hasn't really done much in the 200 snaps this season. He's caught all of 5 balls and has a mediocre run blocking grade. But this position simply has fallen out of favor in the NFL. So basically, what they're saying is he really sucks. It's just that there's nobody else. I mean, and Devlin obviously is probably going to, I think, would be the fullback in the AFC if that's his competition. A guy that the pro football folk says he can't block and he basically sucks. He doesn't do anything. But you know what? Let's put him in our Pro Bowl selection.
I don't get it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
By the way, Lombardi, when he was talking about Tomlin, which I thought was interesting, and Mike is one of those.
McCaffrey's another name. Go ahead. Sorry. Jesus.
This is going to drive
Chris
you crazy.
Carson?
Just do me a favor.
Go ahead.
Here, rip it up.
Go ahead.
Rip the whole thing.
No, I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah, it's like pro football focus. It's not like whatever.
He's probably right.
Edibleanus.com putting out their Pro Bowl, right? I mean, this is pro football focus.
You'll get those in the mail
Jesus.
Next week. So Tomlin is amazing to me that he's probably right. There is no way that Mike Tomlin will get fired. They could lose this game against the Patriots Sunday. They could lose the game in New Orleans a week from Sunday. And who's the last game they're playing? The Browns. They could lose that game. How's that? They could lose all 3 of these games. Mike Tomlin is not getting fired because Pittsburgh has the attitude, we don't believe it's the coach's fault, and we're going to support the coach. And the Rooneys have done this for years. They've had 3 coaches, right?
Yeah.
Noel, Cowher, and this guy for how many years? But is it the right thing to do? And you're telling me that you can't find other coaches? Did the LA Rams, did they not find
a
guy?
Well, that's why I disagree with Mike, and he's when I said it'll find someone else. He's like, oh, you can't find, it's not easy to find someone else. They'll always find somebody else. Well, I remember going through this when Doc Rivers left. You're never going to find anybody else. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knew about Brad Stevens. Pretty good. We'll see how good, but pretty good.
Yeah.
We were talking about Farrell, and I kept harping on that guy. Who else are you going to find? There's always somebody else There is always, everybody is replaceable. Everyone, including you and me. Maybe not, but still, we don't think so, but there is.
Trust me, when Mike says
no, you know, and I was fired. Exactly, Mike. You were replaceable, too. You know, everybody's replaceable.
The Mike Tomlin thing is crazy because I've talked to Steeler fans who, you know, will support the team, love the team, the little yellow little hankies they carry around and all that other stuff, and they always bitch about Tomlin. So, and he was just saying, Mike was saying, it doesn't matter what the fan base thinks. They don't care. So maybe you spend all year long just bitching about Mike Tomlin.
Let me ask, who's a better coach, Mike Tomlin or Marvin Lewis?
I would give Tomlin the edge there, yes.
Why?
Because I think he's won more.
Okay.
Okay? I mean, how can I say Marv Lewis in any conversation about any coach in the league when he's never won a playoff game? He's been around for 15 years. He's only gone to 5 of them.
I agree with you, you know, but it's look how long Marvin Lewis stuck around.
15 years.
And you got an organization like Pittsburgh that is even more loyal to their coaches. I don't think Tomlin's going anywhere.
Well, I think since he's moving on from Marv, they're going to Hugh Jackson.
But I'll tell you this, I'm not offended by discussing it like Stephen A. was, but still, I don't think he's going to go anywhere.
It's a bad week for Stephen
but
A.
But it's just, oh, it's a bad week.
Did you notice yesterday on Twitter and everywhere you went, people were just playing
Derek,
off
you see
of,
Derek Johnson tweeted
I
at
did,
him?
Yeah. I did.
I mean, all these people were tweeting him. Damn, he thought I was playing? Hey, I'm not playing tonight, Stephen A. Like, all these former players are just...
They ain't gonna give a damn about it.
Crap it all over him.
Killing him. The Brewski look.
But Stephen A. did tweet out something about watch out for this matchup, and he had a picture of Hunter Henry and Derek Johnson. So I think he was having some fun with it.
Well, we'll do that with Brewski next week. We'll just have you guys ask like all these questions about ex-Bills.
Yeah,
ex-Bills. Oh, we should do that. Yeah, we should do that next
Kelvin
week.
Kelvin Benjamin versus Stephon Gilmore.
Really strong.
Yeah,
but the Mike Tomlin thing is amazing to me because when people say, is he a good coach? You notice the sales staff is all drinking heavily
today?
Double
fisted. They just walked by
double fisted. Back here.
They're walking into the men's room double fisted with two cans of beer.
Just moved in like yesterday. It was like Labor Day going to college.
It was yesterday.
Everyone's walking around like they're trying to find where their dorm is. And then like 24 hours later, they're all just partying up there in that little private room over
We're
here.
We're trying to work here, fellas. Trying to work. We got Jesus. A working I mean, show here.
It's still a working environment.
Look at them all drinking.
Drinking a couple of beers is one thing, but the three or four strippers that I... The three or four strippers I saw in there, I thought was a little bit overboard.
Oh, those were strippers?
Well, I thought they
were new sales weasels.
I don't know. Taking another level, but I tell you
They're
what.
They're going to be here for a while. Yeah, Joey's down there. Our boss is
they're
down there drinking with him. He's drinking with him, too.
They're having a good time.
A lot of work is getting done today.
Yeah. No one's all drinking. Departments. It's just all non-alcoholic.
It used to be that, like, 2 days before Christmas, people would take off, like, Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day, and that would be it. And then the next week is useless, right? Mm-hmm. In any business, the week between Christmas and New Year's, forget about it.
Yeah.
No business is transacted. Now it's, like, 2.5-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
People take the, you know. And
well,
I think
you got to get ready.
Get ready for what?
I don't know, holidays.
Shut up, nerd! But that's what people are doing right
now.
Whole
week's off.
So these people just moved in here, but they're basically celebrating the holiday here, right?
Yeah. It's a holiday.
And we're still, what's today's date, the 15th?
Yeah, it's okay. It's right around the corner.
It's the 14th.
A lot of planning to do. A lot of things. They're ready to go, though. They're all getting lubed up.
Christmas trees.
We shouldn't say anything about them, you know. We should.
Passing candies around in there, too.
Christian will bring them in. We got another hour to go.